This is HPR episode 2732 entitled Storytelling Formula Compliance and is part of the series Information Underground. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 28 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is telling a story, want a reaction, use the formula.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everyone, this is Klaatu. You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. Lost in Bronx is doing a series right now on storytelling and writing and that sort of thing. And it's a great series. I've really been enjoying it. And it kind of made me think of some things about storytelling that I used to talk about a lot back in my old job, where I was at least part of the time teaching people how to do how to make films. I was a film instructor, really. And so one of the topics that we had to cover, or that I chose to cover, was what makes a good story. And generally speaking, in a really small amount of time. And that's a really tough thing to sort of get to the bottom of, because obviously everyone has their own interpretation of what a good story is, and everyone has their own interpretation of what a short film versus a normal length film is, a 90-minute film that you would go see at a theater. Film students often have to make these 2-minute, 3-minute, 5-minute films, and even if you accept that, okay, this is just a little snippet of a movie, you want it to be a movie in itself. You want it to be a self-contained story, kind of like a good joke, right? I mean, there are long jokes, there are very short jokes, but they all have a very definite opening and what we call a punchline, a part where people sit up and notice that the thing has ended. And that's really important, I think, for if what you want to get from a story that you're telling is an impact or a reaction. If you want people to have enjoyed something and to know that they have enjoyed it, then you kind of need to signal people. We're kind of dumb sometimes, the audiences, and we need really clear and loud signals that, hey, the story has started. Hey, there's a conflict now. Okay, the story's over now. Everything's wrapped up. You just got to tell people that. So there's certainly a school of storytelling out there that does not involve any of that, and that is perfectly happy to meander through a story and then to kind of trail off until everyone leaves, and that's the end. And then maybe if you're a fan of that sort of thing, then maybe you ponder that for days and days on end. Frankly, personally, I'm a fan of that. That's kind of my thing. I'm much more interested in stories that are less bombastic in their structure. That said, structure is comforting. People really, really like structure, especially when they don't know what they're getting into otherwise. For instance, if you establish something early, for instance, the Marvel Universe, right? Everyone pretty much knows when they're going to a Marvel movie that they're going to see some Marvel superheroes doing super fantastic things. And so if one of the movies is about the whole world about to end and the heroes have to fight the big bad guy, then everyone's okay with that. But because you've built up this reputation and this universe that people are perfectly happy to just kind of hang out in, that has afforded the Marvel Universe to play around a little bit more with structure. And some of the movies are a little looser, some of them are a little bit funnier than others, and so on. So if your goal is to write a story and for people to notice that you have just told them a story and for people to care about the story that you have told them, there is this trick that people use in Hollywood and on the New York bestseller book list or whatever. And that is this thing that people generally just sort of call the formula. And not a whole lot of people know what the formula is, and other people do know what the formula is, but they have a different formula than someone else. So, very generically, the formula is the idea that a character begins going one direction and ends the movie 180 degrees in a different direction. That's the formula. What does that look like realistically? Well, it means that you need to have a character who starts out definitively being one certain way. And then you need to have a movie through which this character journeys and has some experiences happen to them, such that by the end of that journey, they are no longer that way, and in fact, for best possible impact, you want to have them be the polar opposite of the way they were at the beginning. Here's a super easy example that pretty much everyone can identify with if you've seen some of the really, I guess, classic films. I'm not a fan of this film. I don't know why I'm using it as an example, except that I know a lot of people really, really do like it, and it is, in fact, one of those movies that gets kind of hammered into you in film school, so I know it fairly well. It's called The Godfather. It's by Francis Lucas Spielberg, and in the movie, there is a character, and I don't actually know which character it is because I don't remember, but he's played by Al Pacino. And he is the second in, or he's the heir apparent to being the next Godfather, should the first one die off. Now, the problem is that this character hates the family business, the mafia. He doesn't want to have any part in it. He can't stand it. And at the beginning of the movie, that's his position. He does not want to be in line for power. He doesn't want to become the godfather. He doesn't want to have anything to do with the family business. It's just not what he does not have any interest in it. He wants to get away from it, in fact. Some stuff happens, and then by the end of the movie, what do you know? There he is, standing in the doorway, looking pensive and as if though he has come to peace with the fact that he is now the Godfather. So that's a super simple and obvious example that lots of people have seen. There are lots of other examples. So, like I say, there are also degrees of how much these characters turn. You don't necessarily have to have them turn 180 degrees. You can usually fudge it with like 120, maybe 100. 90 doesn't usually work. It needs to be a little bit more drastic than that. But people, if you do 180, people really, really love it. You can also think of a dozen examples if you name any romantic comedy. Generally speaking, the formula as applied to a romantic comedy is that you've got a woman, and she is very much in love with the wrong man. Everyone knows it's the wrong man except this woman. She'll go through most of the film insisting, in fact, to herself, in spite of all evidence to the contrary, that she is in love with the wrong man, even though Mr. Right comes along about a quarter of the way into the movie, and she can't stand him, she rejects him, he's not good enough for her, or whatever, he's crude, he's crass, he's foppish, whatever it might be. And then, of course, by the end of the movie, she's turned around 180 degrees and realized that the wrong man is indeed the wrong man, and that the right man is about to ride off into the sunset without her unless she catches up with him in time. I don't really know how many more examples I could possibly do. They're all over the place. Think about Return of the Jedi. Darth Vader has spent two movies being really, really bad and despicable, but by the end of the third movie, he has turned 180 degrees and kills the Emperor in order to save his son, and now he's a good guy. For possibly a more elegant version of some of these examples, you may want to go watch the Ridley Scott movie The Duelists. It's an early, late maybe 70s movie about some duel fighters in Napoleonic France. And it is just a fascinating movie, and it's got a really beautiful example of how this 180 degree effect can really, really hit home. But enough of the examples. How do you leverage this formula for yourself? Well, first of all, like I say, you don't necessarily have to. A lot of times, part of knowing the rules, or part of knowing the formula, is you know it, so now you don't have to follow it. You can break it. But I'm just telling you, 9 times out of 10, if it is something that you're seeking, if you're going to people and you want them to react to a story that you have told them, if you use this formula, you will be satisfied. If you do not, then you will have to find satisfaction in some other aspect of that experience. you may have to pat yourself on the back for being really, really weird and an edgy storyteller who doesn't conform to conventions or whatever. Whatever it is out of that you want to find pleasure in is up to you, but don't expect people to give it back to you unless you use the formula, because that's what people are expecting, for better or for worse, and that's a different conversation. But I'm just saying, generally speaking, that's what people are expecting. So let's do some practice work here. So let's invent a formulaic story together. And now, if we were going to program this, if we were going to script it out in code, the general pattern that we would have to leverage is A, Z, A, some stuff, so B through Y, essentially, and then Z again. So that's A, Z, A, B through Y, and then Z. What that means is that your character needs to start out one way in condition A, right? You need to emphasize, you need to demonstrate that the character is in condition A. It's not enough to just tell the audience that that person's a mean person. That's not enough. You have to demonstrate it, right? So that's A. Then you have to dip into Z a little bit. Maybe someone comes into their life unexpectedly and turns their routine upside down. So now they're in state Z. Whether they like it or not, they've gotten there. Or maybe the character has sat down and thought about their life, reassessed things, and said, you know what, I shouldn't be in state A anymore. I should be in state Z. Well, that's fine, but we can't let the character spend the rest of the movie in state Z. That's where they want to end up. So we need to get them back to state A, and then have the movie happen, have the bulk of the movie happen, and then finally in the end they make that last minute turnaround back to Z, and the audience leaves the theater feeling very sure that the character has changed the error of their ways. So here's an example. Let's say that let's do the romantic comedy type example, because that's low-hanging fruit. So if there's a person, there's a guy, right, and he's single, and he's fancy-free, and he's super happy being single, and he's fancy-free, and he loves them and leaves them, and we can show that. We'll show him being careless and free and all the wonderful things he does as a single guy. We get to follow along for the first couple of minutes of the movie, which, believe me, is longer than you think, or shorter than you think. It'll feel longer than it actually is. It'll be like only 5, maybe 10 minutes. And then at some point, he's going to realize that maybe this isn't as much fun as he thought he thought it would be. He's decided he needs to find someone else, right? So he's flirting, as it were, with state Z. He wants to become a married man, not a single man. He's a single man now, and then momentarily, for whatever reason, maybe he meets a really cool girl, maybe, and for a moment he's seeing the girl for who she is, rather than just as someone to kind of play around with for an evening and then forget about. So he meets a girl and he starts thinking, yeah, I could do this. I could enter into a relationship. But then something in him rejects this idea. It could be anything. It could be maybe he sabotages the relationship somehow by making a big deal over something really small that normally wouldn't bug him. Or maybe he has a reunion with an old friend from school who sits down and is bemused by how this once wild and crazy guy has been domesticated. So something in him tells him, you've got to stop this. You have to be single. You have to stay single for life. So he rejects state Z, the married committed man, and becomes single again. And so now stuff happens. They break up. He loses the girl. The girl goes away. He tells himself he's happy, but ultimately we can tell, and eventually he will also tell, that he's not really happy without being committed to this one girl who meant so much to him. And so that's the B through Y, right? That's the second act of the movie, probably, or at least the bulk of the second act, of where we know what the man is supposed to become, but he's rejecting it. He's not that thing. And then at the very end of the movie, of course, something happens. He realizes that he was right after all. He doesn't want to be single anymore. That's not providing him happiness. And so he chases after his true love, who was just about to get married to the wrong man in a chapel, and so on and so on. So there you go. That's the formula applied to the romantic comedy formula. And it's funny that I say I'm going to make that up on the spot, because, I mean, if you really listen to it, it's exactly every romantic comedy you've ever seen. Okay, let's do one a little bit different. Let's do one about wizards. So maybe there is an apprentice, a wizard's apprentice, and he's a good apprentice. He's the best, actually. He's always being told that how great he is, how obedient and studious he is. He's going to go far as long as he just continues to be patient and as long as he works hard and just stays a good little apprentice. And we see that. We see some scenes where he demonstrates, and it is clear at how good of an apprentice he is. And maybe there's a counterpoint of how much fun other people are who maybe aren't as studious. They do other things. They break the rules. They dip into some blood magic or they cast spells that their mentors have told them they weren't ready for, whatever it might be. So our good little apprentice starts to wonder what it might be like to be a great wizard instead of just an apprentice. And so he attempts to perform some big spell and unfortunately fails miserably. So now he's flirting with State Zed right now, right? He's going out of his circle, out of the place where he belongs, and he is trying something that is forbidden because he wants to become a big wizard. So he tries something from the opposite end of the spectrum, and he fails miserably. Now, the B through Y, the second act of the movie, will have to be him trying to repair the damage from what he has done. Maybe he cast a spell and accidentally summoned a demon, and the demon doesn't really, isn't terribly obedient, and so starts wreaking havoc across the land. Or maybe he sent an important artifact off to an alternate plane on accident, and now he's tasked, because he did it, he's tasked to go find it again, to go recover that thing. So B through Y, stuff happens. He has to go through some hardships. And in order to succeed at those hardships, he must remain the dutiful student. He must be patient, and he must be exacting and obedient to his masters. And then at the very end, of course, when everything is looking at its most bleak, he realizes that along that way, as he was being obedient, he's learned so much that he's arrived at Zed. He has arrived at the point of being a great and powerful wizard by having the experience of recovering from his mistake. And now he's a great and powerful wizard, so he succeeds, and the audience leaves with the knowledge that he has overcome subservience and is the new master now. But he did it. He got it honestly is the important thing there. So that's a little bit of a variation, as you can tell. That's a slightly different, because the motivations were different, and the progress of the progression from A to Z is a little bit more natural in that second act. But the end result is again the same. We started with him pointed in the direction of, hey, I'm a noob, and we ended up with him pointed in the direction of, I'm the master. So you should try this at home if you have any interest in storytelling, whether it's to write a book or whether it is to create a fun story for your role-playing group. You should try this. You should sit down with the literal formula, which is, again, A-A, Z-A, B through Y, and then Z. A-A, just remember, A reinforced, Z, A reaction, and then B through Y, all the stuff, and then Z again. That's all it takes, and it will work. So let's do another really simple example where I'll, without the embellishment, we will simply say, okay, there is a person, they are living in an oppressive empire, and they are quite happy living in the oppressive empire because to them order is comfort. So that's A, that's our setup. Now we're going to reinforce that. We can reinforce that with a quick scene wherein this person witnesses some kind of transgression, or, I mean, if you please, it could be a major atrocity, but I would probably go less is more here. They see something, they witness something that you and I would stand up and say, well, that's not right, but they don't do that. Maybe we get a glimpse for a moment that they feel like that's not right, but instead of standing up for what's right, they allow it to happen. But it does make an impression on them. Now we have to introduce them to the other state of being, the other side, to state Zed. We can do that in a scene that maybe they meet somebody from the rebellion, and not only do they turn a blind eye, but after a while they actually help the person. They aid and abet a rebel in doing rebel activity. Well, that was nice for a couple of scenes, but then we need to get back to A, right? We need to get back to our comfort zone. We need to reject what we've just done. So who knows? Maybe they report the person. Maybe they try to confess to the crime themselves, but no one believes them because they're such an upstanding citizen. But now they're redoubled in their desire to walk the straight and narrow path and be obedient to the evil empire. And so B through Y, the big middle part of the movie, or the big middle part of the story, they're doing a bunch of stuff. They do stuff that, because of their association with the rebel, in their moment of weakness, they're getting contacted by other rebels, and they have to deny their affiliation. But of course, in the end, they realize that walking the straight and narrow path, blindly following a selfish, self-serving, and oppressive government, or another word for that is government, is not what they really want out of life. And so they, at the last minute, meet the rebels at the rendezvous point in order to bring down the upper and ruling class. So really, that's it. That is the formula. You have it now. If you are trying to write a story and you just can't figure out how to get it to, how to turn it to be that kind of story that people have an immediate and pronounced reaction to, then follow this formula. And believe it or not, if you spend the money, and I don't advise doing this, but if you spend the money on actual formalized classes in this kind of stuff, they will tell you, and I'm not saying they're wrong, I'm just telling you that they will tell you that every chapter of your book needs to have this structure in a miniaturized way. The state of things within a chapter need to go from A to Z, really, just in a really, really shrunk down version of all of this. And whether or not anyone achieves 100% formula compliance is another story, and there are lots of variations here. There's lots of wiggle room and different ways to express it. It doesn't always have to be so obvious that it is a formula, right? And I think a lot of times when we see a movie or when we read a book that we just feel, it had all the elements. It had all the right elements. Why was it so? Why didn't it just not feel right? A lot of times it's because, yes, they have the elements, and those elements are so obvious to everyone that even if you're not looking for them, you get that they're there, and you know that you're being fed a formula, and so it just doesn't taste quite as good. Now, in point of order here, if you're doing this, if you're making a story for something, you have to also consider your delivery medium. Obviously, movies and books and comics and things like that, these are all audio plays, whatever. These are fairly passive media, so you can tell your story to the audience as is in a very planned out kind of way. If you are trying to apply this, for instance, to a role-playing game, then more often, the concentration, if you're doing like this big long campaign that you want people to feel really great about, I think the more often the state of change is going to be within the environment. And characters should feel like they're having a role in that state of change. Like they came into this demon ravaged land, but by the end of several months of playing through the book or the story, the land has changed back to its natural beauty, and everything is at peace. That's something that you, as the GM, can control, because there's a story there. You can force the setting to turn 180 degrees, and you can make it seem like your characters were responsible for it turning 180 degrees. It's a little bit more difficult to make your characters change 180 degrees. If you can swing it, that's great, and I think that in modern RPG, that is a little bit of an expectation, where the players come to the GM with this character, with a backstory, and maybe certain goals that they have, and the GM attempts to incorporate those things into the game over the course of many, many months, or many, many gaming sessions. And that always feels very good, but it's not the formula. Because generally speaking, there are exceptions, but generally speaking, you bring a character to the GM who is a very, very low-level wizard, and at the end of the story, they have progressively leveled up until they are now a more powerful wizard. And that's it. I mean, that's the drama. So there's no 180 degree rotation there. That is staying the course and becoming the thing that you wanted to become. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that in terms of applying formula to RPG, a lot of times it's harder to do that onto the characters that you don't control than it is on the setting that you do control. Or maybe a very important NPC, like the local queen changes her heart or her style of governance because of this lone or this ragtag party of adventurers and all of the daring deeds that they have done for her, that sort of thing. But other than that, the idea of the formula is pretty solid. It runs through stories from long, long ago up right up until, you know, the most recent blockbuster, because that's what we as humans react to. It makes us feel really, really happy when someone overcomes problems and then becomes a better person because of those problems. I don't know why, it just, that happens to make most people feel pretty good about it. And even I, as someone who says, oh, I don't really like the formula that much, I mean, I still get happy at certain movies. You know, certain movies make me feel like, oh, that is good. That has shown a clear progression of this character, and they really changed it through the story, and that's great. And by the same token, I sometimes really hate movies that fail to do that. That just take a character who never changes and who never does anything throughout the movie, and they kind of end up in the same place where they were. That doesn't affect me sometimes. Other times, I really, really like stories that forego the plot and forego the traditional constructs of what a story is. But that doesn't mean that when I see something that does follow the formula and does follow it well, that I'm not affected, because I am. It works. There are lots and lots of movies that are very formulaic that I truly, truly respect and truly, truly enjoy. So once again, just so you remember, A reinforced, Z, A, everything else, and then Z. Go try it out. Whether or not you want to write stories or not, go try it out and submit your little outline in the comments of this episode. Thanks for listening. Talk to you later.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.